everyone, this is Clarice.
And this is Lauren.
And we're inviting you to pause for a moment with Brevard Zoo.
So, a two-toed sloth, a Brazilian porcupine, and a striped skunk all walk into a habitat together. What happens next? We're starting to learn ourselves.
Here with us today is Area Supervisor of Ambassadors, Madison Polk.
Hello.
Thanks for being with us today.
It's good to be here.
Okay, Madison, we've had you on the podcast before, but for folks who are new to the pod, what's an ambassador animal?
Yeah, so the official Association of Zoo and Aquariums definition is an animal whose role includes handling and or training by staff or volunteers for interaction with the public in support of institutional education and conservation goals. All of that is basically meaning to say that they're animals that we train, we handle, we bring to different events, we bring to educational programs. So they're very tractable animals that can go out in the zoo, they're comfortable around people, and so they're just helping teach people about their species.
Very cool. And if you've happened to miss an educational program or one of our chats, which please don't miss any of those, you can also see them in the barnyard.
You right? sure can.
Our goats and our awesome spurred tortoise, Sahara, and our doggos.
Mm-hmm. And our chickens.
And our chickens. How could I forget the chickens? Rude.
They're the all-American ambassador.
Yes.
So can you kind of further explain why these animal residents in particular are really important to the zoo world?
Definitely. So with education and teaching people about the specific animals, but we also teach about conservation, not only here at the zoo, but also out in the wild. So a lot of times when people are interacting with animals in an up close setting, it creates more empathy for the animals and helps create connections between them.
Okay, so a lot of our ambassador animals, minus our barnyard friends, you don't really see a lot unless you happen upon them in a chat or a program or another cool activity in the zoo. But this is changing a little bit, right? So tell us a little bit about the change that we've made for a few of our ambassador friends.
Yeah, so we inherited a habitat. So it originally had king vultures in it, and the king vultures have moved. And so we've moved in some of our ambassador animals into that larger habitat. And this habitat is in view for guests to be able to see the animals.
Very cool. I really enjoy seeing the interactions of these guys so far.
Yeah.
It's so fun. Oh, man.
Can you kind of tell us the process of what it was like to transform the vulture space into this multi-species habitat, what you needed to add, that kind of thing?
It was definitely a process. It took a lot of sweat. No tears. We did pretty good. But so originally with the vultures, it had a lot of like what we would call upright perching, so larger branches because they like to sit on the top of them. But with these species, they're all arboreal or animals that like to live in the trees, minus the skunk. And so we had to re-perch, is the term we usually use, the entire habitat. So we added in all kinds of big branches, ropes, because the sloth really likes to crawl across ropes. We added in a ton of plants to help with visual cover in case so the skunk feels safe while he's in there. We also added in multiple boxes for them to share, boxes with heaters for the winter. It probably took us in total 3 to 4 months to complete that part of it. And it's kind of ongoing, like we're continuing to add to it and wanting to do more with it.
So who is calling this habitat home right now?
So currently we have Higgins, our two-toed sloth, Shelly, our Brazilian porcupine, and Oscar, our striped skunk.
Very cool. Now, why were these animals chosen to live in this new habitat?
So the habitat itself is pretty large and it's pretty high, so it works really well for arboreal species. And we, you know, kind of felt that both our porcupine and sloth would benefit from having a larger space because they are pretty active animals, especially overnight. So, you know, nocturnal animals, they don't get as much interaction overnight. That's when they're most active. So we wanted to make sure that they had a bigger space to be able to do all their natural behaviors. Same with the skunk. He's nocturnal too.
All these sleepy boys and gals.
They're all very sleepy. Yeah.
And you mentioned that you're still making modifications to the space. Mm-hmm. Like, what are those modifications like?
With anything, I find that something that seems simple always gets really complicated, and it's just life. So, like, we made a heater box for our sloth and then one for our porcupine, but then they kind of, like, swapped which box they wanted, which was fine. So we're going to modify one of the boxes so it's more conducive for a sloth. And then, like, one of the heaters was not working quite right, so we're actually working on building a whole new box for that. And then the plants were added in just last week by our awesome landscaping team.
Very cool.
So what are we hoping that this new space will offer these animals? I know you talked about how they're nocturnal, so they don't get as much interaction. Is there anything else that this habitat space is providing for them that's really beneficial for them?
Yeah, more climbing space. The habitats they had before were fine. They were suitable, but we always want to do things, you know, bigger and better if we can. So it's a great opportunity for them to be able to have more movement. So that's just natural for them. More climbing opportunities, more enrichment, because they now have like options of multiple different kinds of substrate just with the natural ground, more natural plants. These animals are browsers, so they eat different plants in the wild. And so if they have those in their habitat, they can be up at night just munching on plants like they would in the wild.
Cool. And how are we gauging its success? Are there any like things that we're looking at to, you know, like make sure everybody in there is comfortable and is good for them? Yeah. This keeps her up at night. Yeah.
Lots of monitoring. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure everyone is as comfortable as they can be, and that safety is a big aspect of that. We want to make sure animals are safe, not going to be in any trouble. So anytime we had first had animals out there, we would monitor during the day initially, and then we would bring them back to their old habitats at night until we felt like they were comfortable. And then those first few nights we would have cameras on them so we could observe the footage and make sure they weren't getting into any trouble or anything, or just messing with things or having odd interactions with each other. So it's a lot of work to just, you know, make sure the animals are comfortable. We also have keepers monitor them, but we have a really great group of volunteers here at the zoo, and our rainforest volunteers helped us out so much by either standing in front of the habitat all day, or they would make stops to come by and just monitor the animals. So it's been a long process, but it's gone very smoothly.
I'm so glad.
What were you kind of monitoring in the initial stages of that?
So we would have one animal out at a time to assess, like, you know, are they comfortable moving around? Like, whenever we perch something, we want to make sure it's accessible so that there's pathways. And if there's multiple animals together, we want to make sure there's different pathways that they can travel. So if they're not huge fans of each other, they have plenty of space to like go around each other.
Cool. And are there any like big goals you're really wanting to learn from this?
Yeah, we're excited just to kind of see how the behavior, you know, develops with the animals. Are they going to, you know, do more? Are, you know, they're more enriched, so their welfare's up. Are we going to see different signs where, you know, they're kind of showing us that they're very content in the space? But also from the guest side, we hope to do more things to the habitat. We don't have like any plans laid out at the moment, but we've talked about adding like different, what we've been calling them ports, but basically doors in the front of the habitat. So if we want to do an ambassador encounter, we can just literally open the door to the front of the habitat and have the animal like come out on the guest pathway. We've talked about different spaces inside where we could do like a perching thing. We actually recently had a group of, we tested it out, a group of campers come in the habitat with me, and they got to do a whole experience in there where they got to help me clean and make enrichment for the animals, and it went really well and the kids had a good time.
Oh my gosh, that's like a memory they're gonna keep for life.
Yeah, that was really cool. I was like, I want to do this as a kid.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. How is everyone doing? How are like all the interactions going between everyone?
Good. So originally we had our sloth Lorenzo in there, and him and Shelly were the first to interact. They did really good together. They aren't like best friends, but they do fine. They share space and they tolerate each other just like they would in the wild. However, we did recently swap him with our other sloth Higgins, because Higgins is younger and he normally comes out on our ropes near our barnyard area, and he's just very busy. So we felt like with Lorenzo being a little older, a little less active, that Higgins would actually be a better fit for the larger space so he can explore more. Lorenzo still has a great space and he gets to come out, but he's just a little calmer and isn't trying to like probe every inch of everything because he's not in his 2-year-old phase anymore. But it's been going really well. Oscar, I don't even know if the other animals know he's in there. We've tried to like have him come up on like a high rock or log, and they've just mostly ignored each other. But Oscar benefits from those animals because they'd all drop, like if they eat their food, they'll drop pieces of it, and he gets to just go clean it up
for us.
Less for me to clean, you know.
Yeah. How was the like first intros with everybody?
It went really well. A couple, so if like say Shelly the porcupine is upset, we look for those behavioral changes. Her quills will actually kind of stand up, kind of like when you get goosebumps and your hair stands up. She'll kind of rock back and forth or chatter her teeth. We really didn't see a whole lot of that. Sometimes they would like boop their noses together and they might like do a little hiss, but they would part ways every way. Shelly did at one point just kind of walk across the sloth's feet, and the sloth was not a huge fan, but they just kind of like, what do are you doing? Whoa. And they were fine with it. So we've done a lot of introductions. And at this point, Shelly is still not going out on her own overnight. We just want to make a few modifications to the roof of the habitat for her safety. So during the daytime, she's still coming out meeting the other animals. And then she has a whole big night house that she goes into overnight. So we have to shift her in for that.
Cool. Have you noticed any other new behavior changes for these guys, positive or negative?
I think mostly just Higgins especially is so active. He will, you'll see him just like crawling across the roof, just going on his way. He also, it's always kind of been his thing. We've had Higgins since he was very young. Unfortunately, his mom wouldn't take care of him, so he was hand-raised. For a sloth, he does go on the ground a little bit more than other sloths, mm-hmm. and we have a big box for our skunk, and he does like to sleep in the skunk box with him. So that's kind of new. He's been going to the ground more, but I think he just loves the box. It's super cozy and full of pine straw and hay, so I'll open it up expecting a skunk, and surprise, sloth is inside.
Surprise sloth. Mm-hmm. I wish that was my life.
I love Higgins. He's like actually a troublemaker, but I love that about him.
Yeah, that's fun. Well, it makes the day like a little interesting. It does. You know, not that
you never know what's going to be in the box. But
yeah, that's true. Man. And I know we have two other skunks.
Mm-hmm.
Will they be introduced to the habitat as well?
So that's the goal.
Okay.
We have Dexter and Dee Dee. They are siblings. Dexter was recently neutered. So once he recovers from that surgery, we're going to start doing intros again. We had originally done some intros. They were kind of tolerating each other, getting to know each other. Male skunks typically don't hang out too much in the wild, but it's such a large space that we're going to trial it and just see how it goes. And if it's successful, they will live over there with them. But if not, if they choose not to, then that's up to the animals. But we're hoping with Dexter being neutered and just some more intros and things that they'll hopefully move out there. I'm not too worried about Dee Dee. She's kind of just more to herself and she just sleeps in a burrow most of the day unless you call her out for food.
Wish that was my life.
That sounds good.
Right.
Do you think having this new cool space has affected their willingness to go out on program?
So that was something we had to consider, is that it's a huge space. Are the animals accessible? And that's something with ambassador animals we have to, think about, is that we have to get them to go to a program, but we always want everything to be their choice. So typically we'll open a crate, and if the animals willingly go in the crate, we never push them in the crate. We always just use positive reinforcement, giving them lots of treats. And if they go in the crate, they'll go on programs. And if they show any stress behaviors during the program, we'll actually end it and bring the animals back. But we have not had any significant issues with them not going on programs. So we actually put a shelf right in front of one of the boxes. So it's really nice. You can just put like Shelly's crate right on it and she can just go right in. I did crate Higgins from his skunk box the other day and he went right in. So far, it's been going really well. Oscar, as long as you have snacks, he'll always follow you around. Sometimes when we're out there, we're having to really watch where we're walk because he's just kind of underfoot.
Yeah, he walks really closely.
He's Velcro skunk.
Adorable. All right. So you touched on this a little bit,
mm-hmm.
But any other thoughts, plans on the future of the space? So we talked about we're adding more skunks. Anything else that we're thinking for this place?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a big habitat. The more dynamic we can make it, we've looked at other species that might be, you have to look at like what makes a good ambassador animal, what animals would work well in that space with those other animals. So I would love to add more animals in the future. We currently don't have any plans for that, but we definitely have all like had our dream animals that we would want to put in there with them and just kind of joked about it. But it is something we're looking to do. As far as the encounters and things, I think just developing those further, testing things out, seeing what works. Anything where, if it's possible to bring guests inside for an encounter would be super amazing. We just have to make sure safety-wise that everything is in line. But those are definitely things that we would consider doing.
It's time for the rapid fire. So you haven't seen these questions?
I have not.
Okay. Just first thing that pops in your brain.
Okay.
Okay.
It's kind of scary.
I know. You're like, yeah, are you sure you want this? Yeah. All right. Licorice, do you want to do the first one?
If you were one of these three species currently in the habitat, how would you use the space? How would you spend your day?
Oh, man. I would want to be Oscar for sure because I like snacks. He likes snacks. We all love snacks. And they're just falling from the sky. So I would spend my day.
That must be pretty cool, actually.
I would spend my day foraging and digging because it's just a natural habitat. There's bugs and different things that he can eat in the substrate. I'd be exploring, going through tunnels, harassing the other animals, all that good stuff.
Sounds like an incredible day. I don't know. Okay. This, you may have just answered this, but we'll find out.
Okay.
All right. Which ambassador currently using this space is the most likely to be using different areas, different enrichment in the space?
Higgins, for sure. Oh. He is so busy. He is on the ground and up in the air. So he has all levels of that. I mean, all the way from the roof to the literal ground, he uses every inch of that habitat. Oh, it's incredible to see. And he loves enrichment and he loves his snacks too. So he'll come over and interact with those different things.
Cool.
Which of these animals do you think are the most likely to be best friends?
I'm really hoping all the skunks. That's the dream.
Yes. Yeah.
But I feel like Shelly and Higgins, they may not be best of friends, but I think they'll learn to love each other.
Mm. They sound like respectful roommates.
They are. They do their dishes. You know? They keep their areas tidy.
That's all we can ask for.
Well, and one of the challenging things too is like when you're feeding animals in a multi-species habitat is you have to think about like, you know, we weight manage our animals. We weigh them often, make sure that they're healthy and they're not eating things they shouldn't. So just finding ways of putting in an enrichment that the sloth can get to, but the porcupine can't because they can all climb, or putting things in that the skunk can get to, but the other ones can't. So that's also part of all that.
Yeah, you're getting real creative, I bet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh. The creative juices have been flowing.
Okay, final question.
Ready.
What is your dream animal for this space?
It would have to be a tamandua. They are a type of anteater that lives up in the trees, so I think they would do really well in that habitat, and I just have always wanted to work with one. I think they're absolutely fascinating and super cool. So that's my dream. Tell my boss.
Okay.
I want a tamandua.
Everybody write in. Yes. That sounds incredible, though. An anteater that's arboreal.
Yep, and they're commonly used in ambassador programs. As long as, you know, they're trained and learn to be desensitized around people, a lot of times they're used for different programming.
Very cool. Man, that, like, ambassador complex, like, highway, the arboreal highway, is going to get so crazy. Busy.
It is.
It's like one of the craziest things I've learned working at a zoo is, like, there's an arboreal version of anything.
There sure is. You got the ground version and the air version.
Very cool. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Madison. Appreciate you coming on.
And happy to be here.
Yeah. All right, guys. So head to our Rainforest Revealed loop to check out all of our incredible ambassador animals and see what they're up to. I'm going to go ahead and look and see what Higgins is up to because now I'm fascinated.
I saw Oscar running around right before I came in here.
Oh, boy.
Check him out.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe to our channel. And if you have any questions about animal wellness, conservation, education, anything zoo related, send us an email. So you can email us at podcast@brevardzoo.org. That will go directly to us and we can ask those questions to people who are directly in the field doing this every single day and get those questions answered for you. We're looking forward to hearing from you.